SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's getting close to the second half of the show, so Case had to get a top of the hour break in. But those of you that can tell time, you know that it's not the top of the hour, but it doesn't matter. We've got our technical reasons to include those when we do. Happy to get Dick Powell back this morning off the big weekend at Shatin. And with all kinds of important local implications from yesterday. And Dick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And, you know, I've been known to throw compliments around like manhole covers, but Nick Tamaro does a phenomenal job.
Well, and you know Nick a long time. You know Nick back to his origins.
Pretty much. But, I mean, his picks are right on. His writing is terrific. And then he lends further credence when he goes to these tournaments and does fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then just, you know, as someone who doesn't do it the way I used to do it, you know, in terms of volume and work and everything, it's not easy. And to, you know, to do it with style and substance, that's quite a combination, so.
Well, he's got a bunch of tools.
Props to Nick.
Very kind and totally true. Nick, as good as Nick breaks down a race, because he's got a real, you know, one of the real elements that you have to have at the root of your handicapping approach is it understanding race dynamics. I mean, and Andy Serling, you know, tries to explain this a lot, you know, when people have, you know, certain views of horses and connections and stats and they simply will not acknowledge race dynamics. And it's one of the reasons actually that Andy is you know, widely, you know, misunderstood as he is, but Nick's understanding of how a race is most likely going to run. Scully's another guy that's got a very good snapshot of race flow. And as good as Nick can do identifying what the expectations for a certain scenario is, he's a better even. I mean, his handicapping is one thing, but he is as amazing a live money in action better as you'll ever see, and Byer is thought of that way too. I mean, one of Andy Byer's, people only see certain sides of, you know, of what Andy, you know, writes and wrote in the breadth of his career. But Andy, when, you know, once the clock started to tick during the afternoon, he was brilliant. So it's tough to be both. It's tough to be a good handicapper and a good better. But if you had to pick one or the other, I suppose being a good better might be the way you'd want to lean, I suppose, if you could choose.
He just does an awesome job. And then when I read his picks and analysis, his writing is terrific.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you know, for a long time, he was doing the OTB analysis.
Yes, yes.
And then, you know, it got to be, you know, a little bit too much of a time drain. And he wasn't necessarily being compensated to the way he should have been. So it's just great. I mean, it's great. He's really been the, you know, the house handicap. You know, I should come up with one of those, like a Hermes or a sweep or, you know, Ray Count. We should come up with a nickname for Nick, like the old selection grids. You know, Marty McGee is Hermes, for instance, when it comes to DRF these days. So, yeah, I love it.
Did you see the top 20 truncated comments, people's favorite comments that they used to have in the forum and stuff? I know mine. Mine wasn't on there. And it would just be some handicapper that would throw something in because they don't have any room to write. And mine was always edge in tight fit. So they'd have, you know, horse free and name,
nice.
Edge in tight fit. I always thought that one sticks in my head. The others obviously didn't stick in my head because I can't remember any of them. But they had 20, but they didn't have mine in there. And just to, like, sum up all of his chances.
Mm-hmm.
Slide edge tight
well,
fit.
Well, and it's what's interesting that you say that the way you do. There, in the closer looks, and as we discussed actually with Evan Hammons and Ed Fontaine weeks ago when we talked about MetroTurf, that's MetroTurf was the birth of the closer looks that are in the form. And when you read, when you get used to reading the, you know, the 8 or 10 different handicappers that do those comments, and I'll also akin this to Andy Harrington in National Turf. There are certain couplets and phraseology that Harrington uses, and whether it's, you know, whether it's Jim Kachulis writing or Artie Gropper or Steve Grabowski or you know, any of the Brian Pockman, long time closer look writer of two, and everybody around here knows Pocky. Certain people will use certain phrases that are absolute indicators of how much they like a horse and are like a tip off, especially in Harrington, especially. If you go back after races and see horses that won and go back and read what Harrington wrote about their work, you'll pick it up pretty quickly. And, you know, I'm not saying that they use, you know, that they use it every single day, you know, or that in every race that they're it once in a while, there'll be a certain application. And to me, it says it's go time.
Yeah. And I'm familiar with Harrington because I always look him up if I'm doing anything regarding California racing. And mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I do the same thing. I like to go back after the race, and especially with first time starters, and did I miss something? And the nice thing when you read Andy's work, because the layout is very consistent, you see trainers bringing a horse to boil. And usually they bring them to boil 2 weeks before the race. And then the work before the race might be more of a maintenance work, and then they're ready for the race. And that's how many trainers do it, probably Baffert included, when he has enough time. And you can see that. So Andy might not have the last race rated an A-, B+, but it's the second last work. It's usually, for me, the second-to-last work where I really want to see what he rated the horse and what he had to say in the comments and things like that. But, yeah, definitely.
Well, let's talk about the comments that you and Marcus, we talked last week. We had a terrific visit, and I think a lot of people dug into the Hong Kong guide that the two of you constructed, and in fact, you know, yesterday again. It was recirculated on Twitter, encouraging people that were going to look at Happy Valley. Talk about the results, Dick, because it lived up to the expectations.
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, what's a shame is there would have been a gigantic crowd there. And there wasn't, but just watching the races. The sprint race kind of was weird because Ethero made an easy lead. I mean, he didn't even have to be pressed to get up there, and he just had an easy lead over Voyage Warrior. And he's just kind of cruising along. 45.44 for the half. That's good, but not out of this world. And then he gets in a stretch and nothing. And Voyage Warrior couldn't continue on. And then there comes Mr. Stunning, getting a nice one for Frankie Law. And I think he is 8 years old. Let me look. I believe he's an 8 year old. So he's pretty much at the end of his career. So to pull out a group one at 21-1, by the way, Karis Teton and Frankie Law. John Moore said it. They're, you know, other than the bleeding, I don't know how long he's going to be on the sidelines because of the bleeding. My guess is I can't imagine him running the rest of the year because it's only going to get hotter. You know, they can wait till September, October to bring him back and point him for the December major sprint race. But that was kind of shocking, just all of a sudden bleeding out of both nostrils for the favorite in that race. And then we went on to the Champions Mile, and Beauty Generation went off the odds-on favorite. She had a nice trip off a Kaying Star. Looked like he was going to take over. Then he just got in this ding-dong battle with Sudden Legend. Heads bobbing, and right at the line, Sudden Legend got the bob by a nose over Beauty Generation. It was kind of a heartbreaking loss for Beauty Generation. He was gone for his third straight Champions Mile. if he won, he probably would be Hong Kong Horse of the Year. I don't know if he'll get it now. After the race, John Moore mentioned about taking him back to Australia and maybe race once more down there. He's a seven-year-old gelding. There's really nothing more for him in Hong Kong. But then yesterday, during the coverage in the early part of the third, they mentioned John Moore had said that he was looking at a 1,400-meter race at Sha Tin at the end of May. So that'd be great. You know, he obviously came out of the race fine. And, you know, if the bob goes his, goes his way, we're all talking about three straight Champions Miles and one of the all-time greats of Hong Kong racing. So he just couldn't win the photo. Hine was good, 33.13. Then the QE2 Cup, which was kind of hurt by lack of shippers. Exalton went off the odds-on favorite, and he lived up to the billing with a kind of a facile win. Tony Cruz runs 1-2. Zach Purton, who just missed in the Champions Mile aboard Beauty Generation, gets a bit of revenge winning the QE2. And Zach has now become the first rider to win all of the Group 1s in Hong Kong in his career. It's like a career Grand Slam or more than that.
Yeah, I saw that. So that's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, it shows you his versatility that, you know, he's winning with sprinters and distance horses. And Exalton has just been a tremendous stayer this year. In Hong Kong, they went two flat, came home 46 and change, so the race had a nice finish to it, but it looked like Exultance lost it away, and it was. So we get through that, we go to yesterday's Sha Tin, and they upgraded the track after the first race. They went from good to firm. And as you mentioned, it started out kind of rocky. There were three favorites in the first four races. Joe 1-2, Zach 1-2. That's out of the first five, as Paul McGinnis with you last week talked about the two riders in all races. Well, that's the way it looked at the five races. But then suddenly in race six, Tony Cruz had an Irish shipper that had not raced in Hong Kong, had not been out since last October, Delightful Laos, and he pops up 30-1. Was it 30-1 or 60-1? I think 60-1.
30.
Yes. 30, okay. And you know, it's Tony Cruz, I get that, but these are not the type horses that win first out, especially running in the class he ran. He wasn't one of these horses that came in and started out at, you know, 52 rating. He started out 71 rating. So he was in against a decent group. And Derek Lung was the rider, and they got the job done at a nice price. The racing was very good yesterday. I watched almost all the races yesterday morning, just timing-wise. I had the ability to do that, and I was betting them all. It was a lot of fun. Happy Valley is, as Marcus pointed out last week, and as I pointed out with data, it's a quirky track. It's more of a bull ring than Sha Tennis, so crazy things can happen. You can get some big prices at Happy Valley. There's horses for courses. There's trainers for courses. Some trainers do very well there. And so that was a nice card, midweek card yesterday. We go on to Sunday. We have 11 races, 9:30 post time Pacific time, 12:30 a.m. Eastern time. Race 2, 6, and 10 are all-weather turf races, all-weather track races, and Paula talked about them and how much he likes focusing on those races, so he gets three of them on Sunday at Sha Tin. And race 3 is the Queen Mother Memorial Cup. It's a group 3, but unfortunately it only drew 5. They're going a mile and a half on the turf, and 4 of them are from John Moore. So John Moore looks like he has his arms around this trophy. But not really much of a race to pick from to handicap. So the couple of races I will give you, race 8, is a class 3, 60 to 80, going a mile and a quarter. But what's interesting is it only drew 9, and the ratings of the horses that entered are 65 to 74. So you don't have that wide disparity between the top weight and the low weight. And the top weight is only rated at 74. So I'm going to go with number 3, Good Omen, from Doug White and Matthew Chadwick. Chadwick's been ice cold, so I'm kind of going out on a limb here. But he's going to be my price horse in the trifecta. I'm going to play Tri-Box and race 8 with the 3, Good Omen, who has some back class and is kind of like dropping down. Now he's down 125 pounds. But I think the distance will suit. And then I'm going to use him with number 6, Ensemble, who's a logical from Doug White also. This one is with the Red Hot Chad Schofield. He's riding very well. And then we'll throw in number 1, Charity Go, from Danny Shum, the highway. And number 5, London Hall. Not much speed in this race, so I think you might see some slow fractions of when everyone looked to kick. So I'm going to box 3, 6, 1, 5, or if you want it in numerical order, 1, 3, 5, 6. Trifecta box in race number 8. And then race 9 is a 1,400 meters, 7 furlong class 4, 40 to 60. I like number 9, Party Genius. Now, it does draw post 12, but going 7, you can get over from post 12. And this 3-year-old ran well first time out, showed very good speed before weakening. Then he came back from off the pace after getting bumped at the start. Just missed a short head as a 3-1 favorite. I don't think he's going to pay much. If I got 3-1 again, I'd be happy. But I think he's just a stick out in race number 9. That's number 9, Party Genius, with Doug White and Zach Parton. So those are a couple of picks for you for Saturday night, early Sunday morning.
Excellent. Dick, a couple of minutes before we go, and I've got a million things going on. We got Haskin and Shulman. We got Darren Rogers yet. Darren was going to join us. I was going to slip him in, but it looks like now I'll have to push him into the last half hour as Churchill deals with all the arrangements that they're making now that they're able to throw the switch and start to get horses involved. Some reaction, Dick. You know, obviously, and I'm guessing you heard Pat McKenna, and I'm undoubtedly you heard the governor yesterday. What's your latest tea leaf read?
It hasn't changed much. It didn't come up today, but I did not agree with the analysis that we can't run at Belmont for 5 months. Number one, you wouldn't be running at 5 months. You'd be closing Belmont soon after the Turf Classic and Jockey Club Gold Cup. So you're not going to November 1st. You don't need to run six turf races a day. And of course, you're going to destroy your turf course if you're going to do that. Well, they destroyed a turf course up here with the amount of racing we have on it every day, 5 day week. So I still think the most viable option is to stay at Belmont, not have to move everybody, not have to move the workers. And also, when you run up here and down there, under this new world, you have to have the strictest of security at every opening on your security. So this gate, that gate, people walk in. Well, every one of them, I had to go get my blood work done this morning. Well, I walk in, I get the thermometer pointed at my head, I answer a bunch of questions.
Sure.
Well, that has to be done everywhere. And if you're up here and at Belmont, you just add up the amount of gates that you're covering 24/7 to make sure that all the protocols are being followed and things like that. So just me personally, I think there's a chance they will do what they're talking about, race up here without spectators. I just think it makes more sense to stay at Belmont without spectators. I don't see where coming up here without spectators is going to do that much for the economy up here, especially if the restaurants and bars are operating without spectators, you know, just takeout, stuff like that. So it's still unclear. I thought what the governor said made sense. I thought what he made sense at Syracuse made sense, because the state fair, you cannot have a state fair without spectators. You could have Saratoga without spectators. So
right.
that was the kind of the nuance with the two. And if it does lead to having some kind of racing very soon, I'm all in favor. You know, I still have my doubts about the ability to come up here and conduct racing for 8 weeks in an environment that has very little COVID-19 problems.
Yeah, all right. I get it.
So I think most of it is not going to be a racing decision or a racing choice. It's going to be a public health decision.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think that's what has been the driving, you know, the driving force in all of these, in all of these areas, and it feels like some dominoes are falling. Obviously,
one was, and the other one has not a racing deal, but Cooperstown has just literally canceled the Baseball Hall of Fame and is going to hold it in.
Yeah.
They'll end everyone together in 21-21. And that's,
which,
you know, that's,
which
you
will
talk
have to
about
suffice.
Social,
yeah,
distancing. I mean, Cooperstown's so small. You could be on one side of the street, I'm on the other side of the street. They're not social distancing.
That's true.
But,
no, not
at all.
We'll
see where it develops. Just pray that the numbers get better. Forget about racing. Just pray that the numbers get better, the issues resolve themselves, and get under control, and we can get life back to normal.
Yeah, exactly. And it feels like pendulum is swinging back in that direction. It may not be fast enough to suit everybody's interest eagerness, but we're at least the at least we're in the right direction. Dick, I appreciate it, and we will look forward to the weekend and the action and talk next week.
All right, Stevie, thanks.
Dick Powell, everybody. Let's take a break here, about 15 to the top of the hour, and we got to get Haskin and Shulman. This is where I turn it over to them, and I get to, I'll go downstairs, talk to Tina a little bit. No, I'm kidding. Steve Haskin and Lenny Shulman for the, you know, one of the great traditions. I guess maybe we'll have to do it again this summer, leading up to September, but normally right about now, whether it was in person or whether it was with Lenny by me at Churchill and Steve on the phone the last couple of years, Haskin and Shulman on Derby Week, Thurby, well, I'm not going to disappoint you. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you move in right up close to me, that's when I get the shakes all over.
We're back at the races, 10 minutes or so to the top of the hour. And it is Thursday of Derby week. And even though we don't have the Derby that is most normally associated on the first Saturday in May, we do have two Arkansas Derbies. And then there's all the other made-for-TV and made-for-public-consumption fantasy derbies and whatnot. But what people look forward to the most, certainly listeners to this show, Steve Haskin and Lenny Shulman on Thursday of Derby week. And Steve, we welcome you first, and we can't disappoint them, can we?
I didn't know Lenny was coming on. Now I got to try and be funny. I wasn't prepared for funny.
We sprung this on you. I talked to Lenny. Lenny called me after the show on Monday. I think on Monday. Yeah, Monday or Tuesday. Monday. And I said, "What are you doing Thursday? Thursday? You good for Thursday?" I said, "You know, it's Thursday, Derby week. We got." You know, some things can't be, you know, some things can't be canceled.
Well, I was going to call Lenny later. If for some reason when I call him later in the afternoon, I have anything, you know, I say something funny, I'll text you.
Please. And what we'll do is I'll accrue them and we'll.
Yes, I want. If I say anything funny, I want credit for it.
Absolutely. We would not deny you. I'm just, hold on. I got to, I've got to answer this situation. Bad timing here. Hold on one second.
You have to go to the bathroom.
Darren,
that's okay.
No. Darren Rogers freed up. And let me see if he is restricted to, because I may have to slip him in, Steve. And actually, that'll buy Casey time to, he didn't get the
well, if you want,
Lenny
if you want, you can
try.
Have him on first and then come on later when Lenny comes on.
You know what? I think we're going to need to do that because I don't want to miss the chance to talk to Darren. So that's what we're going to do. It's one of those.
Making you do that.
Let's do that. All right, Steve. And in the meantime, you and Lenny, actually give me 10 minutes. You and Lenny can convene and separately and plan the whole shtick, so it should be particularly funny. And I'm putting great pressure.
No, we never plan anything.
No, it's much more fun, free-form and impromptu.
It's improvisation. So,
exactly. And so we'll come back to Haskin and Shulman shortly. Martini and Rossi.
I don't blame
Martin
you,
and
don't
Lewis.
Blame you, by the way, if I peek too soon, by the time you come back to me, by the way, I might be kind of stale. So, yeah, I'm not making peaks right now.
I'm not worried.
Day, you know, it's like Derby Day. You want to peek on Derby Day? 10:57.
Well, that means you got to wait till September.
That's true. Hey, listen, I can wait.
All right, let me pause, and we'll have Darren Rogers in here first. We'll come back to Haskin and Shulman, and while we wait for Darren, I'm just letting him know, coming to you now, boy, my finger, my thumb is, it's so flat, and it gets about three keys every time I go to type anything. So we'll get Darren. I will also, as we wait for Darren Rogers, I just see that word has come that R.D. Hubbard has passed away at the age of 84, and there'll be widespread honoring of Hubbard and the quarter horse legend. And, you know, I don't know as much, certainly, just given, his side of the fence. Not that he didn't have, he had plenty of good thoroughbreds too, but he's so much more synonymous with the quarter horse side of things. And Doc Allred, and who he partnered with for decades, and wow. You want to talk a luminary in an equine sport, R.D. Hubbard, and a man who really made himself into something from nothing. Literally. And tomorrow's going to be hard. We may we'll probably have to save some appreciations of Hubbard for next week. But I wanted to pass this along. R.D. Hubbard, 84. Darren Rogers, I think, is standing by. Darren.
Morning, Steve. I'm a little. Are you there?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. My apologies. I'm a little taken aback by that news you just shared. I had the privilege of working with Mr. Hubbard when I first started in the game in 1994 through early 1998, working in the press box at Hollywood Park, and always referred to him as the boss. And I remember when I got the job at Lone Star Park, he showed up for a quarter horse event a couple of years later. We bumped into each other, and I hear that booming voice, "Looky here, looky here." He was a passionate owner, and I hadn't heard that news until hearing from you.
Well, I'm not surprised that just out of nowhere. I mean, you've got the first person we talked to after reading about it is somebody that had dealings and had an association. I mean, it's one of those names that, is out there in the consciousness. I mean, on the quarter horse side anyway, I mean, just kind of watch and my only real experience came at when I get a chance to go to Los Al, but I mean, R.D. Hubbard, it's kind of in the firmament, as it were. And I appreciate you, giving us an instant reaction to his passing, and there'll be, there'll be tributes from all over the industry and all over equine sport. Darren, the news this morning, it was hard not to, I'm not going to be gleeful, but certainly what we heard yesterday in a steady parade, California, Kentucky, New York, gives us a real roadmap toward getting things up and running in the venues and the jurisdictions where we've been, on pause. And Churchill being able to open the backstretch is certainly the first step toward racing in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, it's a tremendous sense of relief, Steve. It was the first night I've slept well in quite a while. That was weighing on a number of us. We had worked very hard with the other Kentucky tracks and also the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission to, identify all the protocols, as it relates to COVID-19. And, the tricky thing for us in particular in Kentucky is many of the, the horsemen and the backstretch workers, et cetera, Louisville and the surrounding communities here in Kentucky, that's their home for 9 months of the year. And for that 3 month period, they're venturing to the locales, in Florida, Louisiana, and Arkansas. And so, getting them back home safely while also, respecting executive orders. We've worked very, very hard to, take precautions, the procedures that are put in place, set by the public health experts to bring that back. And I can't thank the leadership of Governor Beshear for all the hard work of him and his team and the guidance that the state showed us. And they're going to allow us to reopen the barn areas on Monday, May the 11th. And I'm sure you've talked about this, but it'll be a phased-in approach for the return of the horses. You know, if we said we'd open up on May the 11th, I think if everybody came at once with these new protocols, you'd have a line of horse vans and trailers down Southern Parkway extending onto the Watterson Freeway. So we're going to have a phased-in approach from, you know, the first 3 days are going to be the fairgrounds horses. Then we'll take the horses from Florida over the next 3 days. And then finally, the horses based in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And then we have all the other locales starting on May the 20th. Now, keep in mind that this is all fluid. That's a schedule of events. As you know, Steve Hargrave, our stall manager, and Ben Huffman, our vice president of racing, they're working very hard and closely with scheduling these returns with the horsemen. If we see that the initial testings and the protocols that are in place are going real smoothly, they'll work some of those guys in earlier on some of those earlier dates as well. So it's like a lot of things. It's a fluid situation. The number one question we have is when you're going to reopen, and we're evaluating that right now. In fact, we just got off a call. There's a number of factors in play. You know, I do believe we're going to open sooner rather than later. But we've got to, evaluate the incoming horse population. Ben Huffman's got to write a condition book real quick, and you got to have horsemen, targeting some of the horses to those races. But I could see us, reopening sooner rather than later, and we'll announce those and come to a final conclusion in the coming days.
Darren, when it comes to that next step, do you have mm-hmm. to, at this point, go back to Frankfurt for consent or KHRC? What, I'll ask you the same question that Pat McKenna was asked. What are the mechanics of the next step?
No, we're green lit for horse racing on May the 11th. For us, we're ready to roll. The only protocols, that's not protocols. The only things I think we have to, decide, we're committed to racing 4 days a week, Thursday through Sunday. Does it warrant a fifth day? Maybe we can add Wednesdays in. Maybe early on, shortly after we reopen, maybe we run a Monday and a Tuesday and a Wednesday right away and take a day off here and there. We're just trying to understand from a horse population standpoint how soon we can realistically launch that first day of racing. Then we'll take it a step further. We'll take a look at the other tracks on the calendar. Because it's spectator-free, we're not bound to any specific post time. I don't believe you will see us with any night racing, but we can be flexible with the first race post time, to stay off other tracks. Also accommodate some of our television partners. Fox Sports One, America's Day at the Races, has done a fabulous job with their coverage. Typically it's been, late afternoon to the early evenings here on the East Coast. And same thing with, TVG simulcast showing up on NBCSN. So there's a lot of opportunities and a lot of things to consider there. Where does it best fit? So we'll be discussing those. But really, no, Steve, there's no limitations other than pure logistics on our end. How soon do you think we'll have the stable area filled with a horse population. If we said we were up and running on the 11th, you'd have a van of, you know, horses that would maybe be shipping in to run that day, yet the trainer would want to bring his 30 others. That's not going to be ideal right off the bat. So we're talking through those, but I do think it's going to be sooner rather than later, Steve.
Excellent. And one of the logical extensions of this discussion, an estimate or a guess of what part of the, you know, what part of the purse levels and so forth that had originally been anticipated. Do you have a feel yet, or how quickly will there be? I suppose, is that in Ben's bailiwick right now?
Yeah, you know, and by the way, to be perfectly candid, we heard the actual date of May 11th for the first time at 5 o'clock last night when the governor announced it. I think maybe a select, you know, few people might have been aware of an agreement, but nothing was leaked to any of us. So I could tell you we're all working on that. Ben Huffman is working with the VP of Finance right now to evaluate, you know, the purse account, where it stands right now. We're going to decide how many races we run each day, decide the once you find and we determine that starting date, you know, what we have to deal with. Same thing with the stake schedule. We're going to revise the stake schedule. Those are all going to be the next steps you're going to see from Churchill Downs over the coming days. And as soon as we have, believe me, when I say, you know, we want to start sooner rather than later, in order to first move that forward, we need a condition book and a revised stake schedule. Horsemen need to start targeting races. The good news, they've been in these locales. They're fit. They're in training, and so we need to get them up here and then targeting specific races. So that's going to be the next step. And I think, you know, I hate to overcommit, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something along those lines, a condition book or a revised stake schedule, the next 24, 48 hours. That's how my mind is working. I know they're feverishly working on it. You know, I sent the news release last night, so there are others in the company that assume I may know certain things. I did not, but Ben was chomping at the bit last night wanting to get into this condition book. So we're going to be ready as responsibly and as fast as we can.
A couple other notes to consider as well. Darren, can we anticipate or speculate that a derby prep with points might be included in a new schedule?
Yeah.
How about the new derby trial? A new derby trial. Rebirth of the derby trial.
Let's talk a little bit about the road to the derby. And I know there's been people out there wondering, you know, well, when are you going to release it? Well, we all need to get back up and running first. And see which tracks are operational. So if you start with the September 5th race date, and you want to consider regional representation, you know, we want to take care of horses on the East Coast, here in the Midwest, along with the West Coast as well. Work your way back 3, 4, 5 weeks off that date. Puts you around the first week of August, puts you around August the 8th. I can envision races around there. Typically, there are feeder races to those that are 6, 7, 8 races. I could see some races in there. I can envision up to 10 different races that are still to be run following the Arkansas Derby with different sliding scales of points. That's the thing we're going to have to work on and tweak, and we've been in discussions with different racetracks around the country, but that's how I can envision it. So with that said, sure, you know, it all depends on when and if we can run the Matt Wynn in a quick fashion, but the Matt Wynn is a great example. But I can see that possibly as a return to the prep season race. Right? I don't think that the winner of the Matt Wynn in the middle of May should be an automatic qualifier for the Kentucky Derby. We don't think that way. But I can see that being a 10-4-2-1. You know, get the winner back on the trail or somebody getting something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the Midwest, you can take a look at some of these races. You know, you've got the Indiana Derby. Keeneland still is working away to try and run the Bluegrass at some point during the summer. Ellis Park has the Ellis Park Derby. You look at the East Coast. You've got the Traverse Stakes, depending on when that would be run. You also have, the Haskell and Jim Dandy and out west, I understand it sounds as if they may be trying to reschedule the Santa Anita Derby, run it at some point during their meet. And then, at Del Mar, I think it would be logical to take an unconventional type race, but I think it's important for a stepping stone for maybe a race like the Shared Belief. So you can just take a look at that package, and, oh, by the way, we still don't know when the Preakness or the Belmont Stakes will be run officially. So we would assign points to those if they fall within there. But that's kind of where the mindset is, and it's also why you have not seen an officially announced road just yet.
Sure.
Because it's still a fluid and murky picture at this stage.
Very much so. And we even heard, no, it helps a lot. It's a topic that's been sort of tabled for the last, for the last 2 months, more or less, and while other concerns predominated. And, I think now knowing that, some things are coming to fruition, including, by the way, Santa Anita, that looks like they'll be able to, get started on the 15th, which means they're not going to have a lot of time. They've only got, four Friday to Sundays to run, but before Los Al opens. And Del Mar, but I assume they'll try to get a Santa Anita Derby in. We still might have that to look forward to. So there, this was all fluid, and everybody understood that, Darren.
Yep, that's good. I mean, I know there's a number of people reaching out, hoping to when do you have it, and just told Horseman, work your way backwards. Pick your, what do you want to run? 3, 4, 5 weeks out. I think there will be different spots all along the way.
Well, Darren Rogers, this is gratifying, and I think people really pleased. And I read the release a couple of times, and I didn't connect the dots that it meant that May 11th meant you could do whatever you wanted, including going ahead and running. So that's wonderful news on all fronts. And, of course, you got Haskin and Shulman listening in. They're going to join us next. We didn't get a chance for the invocation. And normally right about now, we'd be sitting together in the media center. And Davis would be giving us his Derby pick.
Boy, you're not kidding. Well, I'd like to wish you first of all a happy virtual Thurby. Today would be Thurby.
Absolutely.
I could tell you the town of Louisville is, and I hope the same for the rest of the horse racing community joins us in our recognition and honoring the traditional first Saturday in May with this Kentucky Derby at home concept. I know a number of the horse players out there are going to be tuned in to, Oaklawn Park. I know I'll be putting together several wagers and a pick five along the way, but have your, mobile, tablet nearby and the hashtag of KY Derby at home. They're going to be doing some fun things virtually. I know Barry Northern from the Kentucky Derby Museum is going to be doing a live walkthrough in empty Churchill Downs. I think they're going to be doing a tour of a local horse farm, checking in on a couple of the
the Stallions and the Mares down there. And then this, you know, this virtual Triple Crown race has been a fun little project to work into the broadcast of NBC. Gives us a way to, you know, pick the winner of the race, go to KentuckyDerby.com. You'll be entered in a sweepstakes if you have the winning horse for an ultimate VIP experience. And then NBC is going to show it at 5:45. And all along the way, you know, we're hoping to raise some funds for COVID-19 emergency relief. Majority of the efforts and fundraising efforts are going towards Team Kentucky, the direct fund, and also the RAIN Fund, which is a great organization that's providing relief to backstretch workers. And I'm so proud that Churchill Downs Incorporated has pledged up to $1 million matching. So if you go on there as a horse player, you know, I don't care if you do $1, $2, $5, whatever it is, everything's going to be doubled. And please help us out along the way and help us pay homage to the first Saturday in May. And instead, we'll have a September to remember.
Nice. A nice pivot, Darren. Thanks for the update. And as the news and as things firm up, we'll check back with you here in a late spring and into the early summer. It seems like we really are getting rebooted here in short order. So, well done, and thanks to you and everybody. The whole staff, and we'll look forward to that condition book hitting Equibase, and I'm sure owners and horsemen can't wait to get started, and certainly players. Not that we're tired of Tampa, Gulfstream, Oaklawn, Fawner, and Will Rogers Downs, but it'll be nice to have Churchill back on the menu, and Santa Anita, and then Belmont, and horse racing setting an example really for, you know, for entertainment and sports industries everywhere. Well done. Thanks, Darren.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve.
Darren Rogers, everybody. Derby Media on your Twitter machine. And we might as well stay here because I have no reason to step away when I know that we got Steve Haskin and Lenny Shulman standing by. And this has been a bit of a vine-to-vine morning. We really, from Pat McKenna to some handicapping with Nick Tamaro, Dick Powell out in Hong Kong, and now Darren Rogers providing the update. And I'll welcome back Steve Haskin and say good morning to Lenny Shulman, who's here.